This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. We're going to continue our discussion about young black men in America today. We're joined from Atlanta by Nat Irvin III. Nat is 25 and the executive producer of Wonderland Productions. Our reporter is with us. He's a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He is also 25, and he joins us from the city of brotherly love. And joining us via phone from New York City, Kevin Powell, author of Who's Going to Take the Weight? Manhood, Race, and Power in America. Kevin is a bit older than 25, but we let him come on with us anyway. Kevin, let me start with you. And I appreciate you coming on at the last minute with us. But, Kevin, you've been working with young black men for a long, long time and have been concerned about the state of young black men in this country. Talk to me about what you hear from most young black men in terms of the biggest problems they see they face today. Kevin, you with us? All right, let me turn away from Kevin. Obviously, we're having some technical difficulties. Let me go to iReporter. Ira, let me talk to you about what I was going to suggest to Kevin there, and that is the question of whether or not you have talked with your peers, particularly, and perhaps done some stories about the issues that young black men are facing. What do you see, what do you hear are the biggest problems and concerns that young black men have today?
Well, I think there are myriad of things, myriad of problems that they're facing when you talk about from the beginning, coming up in homes that don't have fathers, broken homes and the neighborhoods that they come from. And, you know, just how difficult it is to follow through and get an education and get employment and dealing with, you know, I guess, racism and different things in society. I think those are things that you know, affect black men, and it's something that young black males see as a problem for them. Mm-hmm. And I think it's hard to come from those communities and make it.
Nat, what about you in terms of what you have dealt with specifically in your life, your peers? There are a lot of black men that just believe that society is against them, that they don't have opportunity, that they're not given opportunity. How much do you hear from your peers that to be the case, or is that overblown by the media?
From my peers, I don't really hear it a lot. My peers are, I tend to hang around a lot of young black people that are really about doing something as opposed to thinking about the problems that they're going through. There's always a moment we can sit back and reflect on, you know, how much harder it may have been for us to get to where we were. But the reality is that I think that we're going through times right now that may not have been as difficult as the ones that my grandfather or my parents went through. And I can appreciate what they've done to be able to put me in a situation that I may not have had as many struggles as they've had. And for them to be successful means that I can do the same thing. I try not to spend too much time thinking about what the problems are and try to spend more time thinking about what the solution is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, you know, the people I hang around do the same things.
Mm-hmm. I'm told that we have Kevin Powell back. Kevin, welcome. And one of the things that I was wanting you to address is the idea that you deal with, talk with, interact with many, many young black men in this country. You go around the country holding forums and talking with them. Specifically, what are you hearing from them? What are you hearing in terms of the issues and the problems and concerns that they are voicing?
Well, let me say this. One, thank you for having me, Brother Ed. I'm a product of a single-parent household, fatherlessness, poverty, welfare, et cetera, but I also went to college. I'm obviously a professional. I'm obviously middle class now. And I think we've got to be very careful as black men, younger or older black men, college educated or not, to think that just because we may individually be doing well, that that speaks for the issues affecting black males across the country. We are in a very dire situation. I go to about 100 different colleges per year. The ratio of sisters to brothers, be it white colleges or black colleges, is oftentimes 5-1, 10-1, 15-1. I go to prisons. We're loaded in those prisons. You see what unemployment, where I live in Brooklyn, New York, the projects around my area, black male unemployment rate is 75-80%. It's the same thing in New Orleans. It was like that before Katrina. It's in Oakland. It's in Houston. It's all around this country. And so we've got to be very, very clear that there are some serious challenges that are facing black males. And part of the problem is that there's a huge disconnect between brothers like ourselves who, quote-unquote, have made it, are, quote-unquote, successful, and the brothers who need our help. The difference between now and the era that the brother was talking about in terms of our grandparents is that we all lived in the same communities. There was an understanding that no matter if you were middle class or poor, we were in the same struggle together. What we have now is extreme individualism, a lot of scapegoating and finger-pointing, And really, in a lot of cases, I see with a lot of black males who are college educated and successful, an unwillingness and even a fear of brothers in the hood to try to help mm-hmm. them and be the examples they need to see. Otherwise, we end up seeing a lot of brothers aspiring to be rappers and ball players and hustlers because that's what they see on a regular basis. So we need to be clear about that in terms of where we are as black men and not think just individually but collectively.
Our reporter, what of what Kevin Powell just suggested, and that is that there are certain avenues that I would even venture to say, and this is unscientific, of course, that the majority of black men in this country today look to get out of the conditions that too many of us live in, and that is poverty. That is the idea of violence on a day-to-day basis, what you're surrounded with. And people don't like us to say that out loud. We know that all black men don't live that life, but too many of them do. They see only a few avenues, athletics, entertainment, and the like. Talk to me about what you, again, have heard from your peers and what you have observed.
Well, I think he's right when he talked about the problems that people are facing in the inner city, and definitely from, you know, I was a police reporter. I recently switched beats, but I was a police reporter, going over, across the city to different neighborhoods, North Philly, South Philly. And, when you look around, you see a lot of people trying to emulate basketball stars or rappers because, you know, they think that that's a fast way out of, the neighborhood, and it's a quick way to get rich and support their families. And I think it leaves them, wanting different things from a college degree and wanting other careers. I was listening to a segment earlier when, someone was talking about doctors and lawyers and professors, all things that we should strive for. But I think when people see, fast money and they see people, becoming rich overnight, it kind of makes them think that they're taking the easy way out. Instead of going to school, when really for a lot of them who don't make it, I think it kind of makes their lives harder. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what I see. That's a problem that, I faced at one point. I remember wanting to be in the NBA, when I was just starting out in high school. And it was from, the images I saw around me and from, me personally being lazy and wanting to take the easy way out. And not wanting to do,
What changed it for you? What changed it for you?
Different things for me. People who I saw cared about me. I worked in a barbershop in high school, and I got a chance to be around, a group of guys who, all of them weren't, like handling their business, quote unquote. All of them weren't like the best fathers or, role models in the community, but then some of them were, to tell you the truth, I had my uncle. My uncle is, my biggest hero to me. And, he was the first one who talked to me about college, who got me interested in wanting to go to college and really told me that, I was smart and I could do it. And, over time, I lost that fear mm-hmm. of thinking that I wasn't smart enough and that, I could do more than just, manual labor, yeah.
Nat, you mentioned just a few moments ago the idea that your generation clearly has it easier than your grandparents' generation, for instance. And while that is true in many instances, there would be those who argue that it is perhaps even more difficult for black men today in the sense of generationally having the belief that you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps and that you can make it. The idea of optimism may not be as clear and concise as it was for your grandparents' generation. Right. You also talked about the idea of the people you hang around. But there are also, I'm sure, people you grew up with who, right. And here's a interesting condition that black men have. There are black men who will, quite frankly, degrade you if you are trying to better yourself
That's
educationally
right.
and the like. Talk to me about what you face there.
Well, two points. Growing up around others who may not have had even the opportunities that I had, I think we really are talking about solutions that may not be as short-term or as quick to show the benefits as we may want them to be. I think that with any problem, we need to really address what type of real solutions we're looking at. I don't think that we should expect, after a year or even 5 years, we would see a change.
I think habits are formed over a lifetime, and I think that it may take a lot longer to get to where we think that we need to be than maybe we're really assuming. To the second point of what kind of struggles there were growing up with people that may have discouraged the type of activities that I may have gotten into. You know, I ran into that, but I think that more than anything, I think it's important to be sensitive to those who don't have as much and to try not only to let them in on what's going on, but to try to do your best to expose them. I think exposure is really one of the biggest differences between one person who becomes successful and the other person who may not become successful. It's the exposure to the ideas, opportunities, and core values that I think that I've had that have allowed me to think the way that I do and to maybe have some of the success that I've had. I think I would really give it all to that.
Kevin, let me ask you this, and I think part of the problem is we've lost that duality that we were taught, the idea that you can be one way in a certain setting and another way with your boys.
Right.
And that is being lost because you and I both know the guy I play on radio and TV is not necessarily the guy I take to the court or when I go home to Detroit, and never concern myself with having to fit in either crowd. So where can we bring the importance of that duality back and reach out to some of these brothers who must understand that playing the role of, as they like to say now, gangster, is not going to take them beyond their 20s and 30s in any way, shape, or form that they will be happy with?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I want to move this towards some solutions. We're you know, I've been meeting with the Urban League, 21st Century Foundation. There's a lot of stuff in motion in terms of creating long-term plans to deal with black manhood. One of the things that I've jotted down as a possible slogan is be a man, not a follower. What that means is what Nathan M. Call said in your first segment. We've got to create a new kind of self-awareness, a new kind of self-love where we understand that we are complex and broad human beings, not this narrow stick figure. You know what I'm saying? You're not just a middle-class black person. You're not just a poor black person. You're a black man in this country who's trying to do everything that's happened before you and do better than that. And I think that that's very important. And so, you know, part of that changing of values, I feel, means that we have to have a major media campaign because, unfortunately, and I know this as a writer who's published 6 books, that a lot of times, if I depended on brothers to read my books, they may not get sold. And so we even have to get brothers to the level of wanting to read again. A lot of the books that I've sold, sisters have bought it for brothers. And so there has to be a willingness and a development that education is something that is hip and cool and important. Nathan McCall did it in prison. Malcolm X did it. Dr. King had his PhD by 25. We have to explain again, all of us, all over again, that this has got to be a part of our ticket to empowerment. I think we also have to identify those models of success. I want to encourage people to go to www.21cf.org. That's the 21stcentury.org.
There's a C like cat, F like Frank.
Yes, sir. www.21cf.org. That's the 21st Century organization's website. It's the oldest black philanthropic organization in the country. More importantly, there's a major black male and black boy, black man and black boy resource center on that site that tells you about models that are happening around the country. Because we need to say to people, here are the examples of black men who are achieving and doing positive and progressive stuff, and here are things that you can duplicate in your particular community. I want to also add, I heard it earlier, and I know you said it, and a lot of us have been saying it about this leadership void. I actually now respectfully disagree, Brother Ed. I think there's not a leadership void. I think there's been leadership blockage. I've been doing this work since I was a teenager, 20 years now. I'm in my late 30s. And I have to say, with all due respect, part of the problem is that a lot of the older black men, elected officials, heads of some of these civil rights organizations, even the folks who organized the Million Moors movement last Saturday, purposely ghettoized younger black male leadership to 5 or 10 minutes on the stage, as what happened on Saturday, or under the banner of hip-hop, or we call young men until we're 40 years old or 45 years old, and have effectively made it look like there's no activity happening when that's not true. There's Charlie Braxton in Jackson, Mississippi. There's Davey D in the Bay Area. There's Ed Garns in Atlanta, Georgia. There's Clayton Perry in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Ras Baraka and myself in New York. There are brothers all over the country who are doing serious critical work, but unfortunately it's not covered and documented by the media. And so what we've basically said is that we're not going to wait for people to give us the solutions. We're going to create it ourselves. Part of that changing values is that we said we got to identify the areas where black males need to be empowered: spiritual, political, cultural, economic, mental wellness, and physical health. 6 areas, and this is the kind of work we're going to be talking about leading to a national conference on black manhood that we are going to organize and convene June 2007 in New York City, because it's that critical to us. We're going to bring people together who just don't want to talk and be on television or the radio or what have you, but actually are doing the work and are actually going to provide some solutions in very practical ways for brothers around the country, in prisons, on college campuses, wherever they are.
And I should say this, and Kevin, you and I have had this discussion often when the mic is turned off. When I say leadership and black leadership void, I'm talking about on a national level in terms of movement. We know historically for years there have always been people, what those of us who are in journalism like to call on the ground, local folks who've done it and done it and done it and continue to do it. And I salute all of the young soldiers on the front lines who continue to do that without the spotlight. But there are those who have been, quote, anointed leaders in this country that frankly need to step up and take a real fine look at what is and is not being done in our communities, because I think the one thing we all agree on is that we are at a very crucial point.
Absolutely.
And a very crucial crossroads as to whether or not we're going to make it. Comedian D.L. Hughley joked with me one day to say that he doesn't think it's so far away from walking into a museum and seeing a stuffed black man right next to the dinosaur, and said extinct. 2006.
Well, it's
and
real,
so
and we also got
that's
to be
a reality.
Really honest, Ed, because, you know, I heard what Mr. Farrakhan said about the purpose of the 95 million man march. And I mean, you can't just call black men or black people together and not offer some tangible things that people can do. Those
some real solutions. All right. Listen, Nat Irvin, iReporter, and Kevin Powell, fellas, thank you very much for joining us today. Greatly appreciate it. And we hope that we are opening a dialogue for all people who've listened to this program to understand, as Kevin has been trumpeting around the country in his forums, and I have tried to say whenever we've had the opportunity on this show, we are at a crucial, crucial point when it comes to black men in this country. And it's time for all of us to stand up, take a real look in the mirror, and as Kevin always touts, find some solutions. Gentlemen, again, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks so much.
Man.